Well, fascinating discussion tonight with Simeon Hine as we talk about crop formations. We'll be back in a moment to take your calls with him on Coast to Coast AM. Simeon, tell me a little bit about remote viewing and other subtle energy sciences as they are related directly to crop formations.
Well, you know, that's a good question. Crop circles, crop formations are kind of like a form of structured resonance where you're taking a material and arranging it in a certain shape, in this case maybe like a crystalline shape, and you're getting kind of a resonance out of it that's kind of creating energy, generating energy, something like that. And it's a subtle process, especially, George, because it doesn't happen in every single circle we go into. That's kind of what makes it fun, is you don't know which circles are going to be active and which are just really going to be more inert. Now, so it's a subtle process. We don't totally understand the mechanisms, and it's a creating a resonant field. Remote viewing, on the other hand, as I like to call it, resonant viewing, seems to be kind of a process of spontaneous resonance where the brain itself is shifting into kind of like, well, as we say, another domain of attraction. Like, it's reorganizing a little bit. You start out with a blank sheet of paper. There's a bit of randomness. Maybe you get some coordinates if it's coordinate remote viewing. And all of a sudden, it turns from chaos into some sort of order right on the page because of the internal structure of the way your awareness works and the way the subconscious can kind of tap into information fields that your conscious mind is not aware of. So I kind of see remote viewing and crop circles as kind of two sides of the same coin. There are different aspects of resonance, and a lot of these subtle energy processes, even the work of people like Mark Macy and other folks like that, have often said that the real key here is resonance, you know, frequency, vibration. And the real exciting thing is that if we can tune our resonance, or we can tune the resonance of a field of wheat, you know, we can create junctures with other fields of energy information that we normally, you know, don't have access to. I think that's really exciting. And we can do it just with a sheet of paper and a pen, like we do with a remote viewing session, or we can go out in the field of wheat, you know, I suggest with the farmer's permission, of course, and you can shape. And there's probably a lot of other processes, too, that we haven't even explored. But it certainly has to do with intention, shape, and some sort of subtle energy field, which, yes, they're very hard to measure, but I think the statistical evidence shows that they're there.
When do we get answers, I mean, real answers to what these things may be?
Well, I think we're getting answers to it right now. It's just that the answers aren't coming in the way we expect them to come. And this is why people get so emotionally attached and upset sometimes when we talk about, are they man-made, you know, are they UFO-made? It's because, you know, the universe is showing us something. It's bigger than any of us. It's showing us that there's properties of nature that we haven't really understood yet. And we could, you know, we're at a very critical time on the planet. If you haven't noticed recently, a lot of the systems seem to me to be breaking down, you know, just on a day-to-day basis that we've been around for decades and hundreds of years, these kind of older institutional mechanistic processes. It seems to me that these crop formations are a type of spontaneous, you know, kind of non-linear resonant process, which shows us that just as certain older systems are breaking down, there's new types of other systems that could spontaneously arise that could supply us with energy and information and that, you know, could meet our needs and could replace some of the older institutions, which really seem to have, in many cases, have had their day and don't seem to be able to adjust anymore to the times we're living in.
Fantastic. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to, and also if questions for Simeon Hine, or perhaps you have a crop circle story you want to share with us. We'll go to first time caller, Stephen, DeKalb, Illinois, great farmland out there. Hey, Stephen, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good.
You are great show, excellent program. I love your guest, Mr. Hine. I think you're a well-spoken ambassador for this type of stuff. And I simple question that just popped into my head. It's one of the reasons I love watching or listening to George's program. It just makes me think of, you know, different things. But I was curious as to, it sounds as if you believe maybe one of these crop circles may have been created by an extraterrestrial, and then you went into like a form of communication between humans and extraterrestrials. I was curious whether or not you thought there was a possibility that we were being somewhat deceived, and I based that on the fact that when you walk into these circles and your batteries are drained, and I was curious if you've ever run across an experience in which they were recharged.
Hmm.
Right. Yeah, that's what we're waiting for, the day when it makes our technology work better. Because it seems that our technology doesn't interact in a way that it likes with the crop formation for a variety of reasons. But I'm not sure if it's really like deception. It's more that I see the process as a blending of extraterrestrial and human energy. And I know that makes some of us uncomfortable because we want it to be either this or that. And I don't think it's a this or that universe. It's a universe with a lot of gray zones. And this seems to me to be something that started out with perhaps extraterrestrials. We don't actually know who's in those structured craft, but it could be extraterrestrials. And it's turned into something that's kind of helped to educate humans about the nature of geometry, mathematics, shape, and resonance. It almost could be seen like a training project to get us involved in some way. So I see it more as a blend, and that's why the human-made circles, to me, don't seem to be deceptive in any way. It's more that they're kind of a natural evolution of the whole process. And to me, it just seems a healthier way to look at it than to say it's got to be this or that, because it's really a blend. There's certainly many, many cases of UFOs being associated with these formations. I mean, I've talked to farmers myself who have seen these, and there are certainly many cases of man-made ones. You can't actually give percentages. And there's another element. Can I just add this in? We don't know that even after, if humans make a circle, if there could be some sort of overlay of extraterrestrial energy later on. In other words, if the shape is resonating with certain frequencies that we normally don't communicate with consciously, if the crop circle is doing that, perhaps it's setting up a communication channel with other forms of intelligence that we can't even identify yet. Because, you know, often when you're in them, and I'm sure other researchers have found this, you almost feel like you're being watched. It's not easy to identify why you feel that way, but it's almost like there's a two-way channel there. And so, and that's another sense where the whole thing becomes a little more mixed and is not so, you know, black and white.
If your batteries get drained when you're in these crop circles, what about you physically, Simeon?
Yeah, right.
Have you been drained?
Yes, that's really a good point. Some of them make you feel really exuberant and excited, and some of them make you feel just plain bad. And I remember a story that, Ron Russell told once, that he went into one and it made him feel really lousy, and he went out, but he took a drink of water from his canteen, right, that had been with him in the circle, and he got that sick feeling again, almost kind of like a homeopathic effect of the crop formation on the water, like, you know, you were talking about in the first hour of the show. It's almost like there's some sort of, as it's called, the epitaxial effect. It's just that the shape of the wheat or the pattern impacts the shape of the water in some way and replicates that feeling. At least that was his response. So some of them really make you feel great, and some of them, and I don't know what the difference is. But I can tell you one thing just before we go to the next question. This is something that's really interesting. There is a certain pattern to the crop formations that drain our batteries and affect our cameras and equipment and so forth. And it seems to me that the ones that are based on fractal shapes, you know, kind of self-similar repeating shapes, kind of like our lung structure or trees or mountain ranges, things that look like that, that have a lot of branches. It seems to me that the ones that have a lot of nesting of one circle and smaller circles and smaller circles, kind of like that, to me, in my experience, those are the ones that are most energetically active and the ones that feel the best. So there is something there about the shape and the effect that could have something to do with fractals.
Let's go to Rick in Tucson, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hey, Rick, go ahead.
Hey, thanks, George. Appreciate it. I'm an old friend of Bruce Lipton's. And I was on August 5th in this same area. Simeon, you must know the Barge Inn, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. This is the place where all of the people gather, George. And when there's a new one that's located, everybody runs and goes. And this is the hub of where we all meet, right?
Okay. Yeah, spent a lot of time there. It's great. It's a great place.
Yeah. So, I was most amazed. I'm a wildlife biologist, and it's really amazing to see how many wildlife sea creatures we're seeing. And I really think the word I keep listening for is art. You know, we're really seeing these shapes giving us this artwork like a gift. And I like what you're saying. It's a teaching situation. I have a question for you with that. To me, it's a big classroom. Back to how you were feeling sitting in the different crop circles. We took time. We found a crop circle that nobody had walked into. I was with a guy by the name of his wife was there, Brian, and Stephanie took us into a crop circle. We found one, you know, that was announced at the Barge that, gosh, run up here and look, there's supposed to be one from last night. So when you get there, there's no tracks, there's no car tracks, there's no people tracks. So you know something from above had to make it. And we went in, did the blessing that you're supposed to do, carefully walk into the wheat, appreciating the farmer. And then we actually sat in different parts of it. And was an incredible draining feeling, something that like wanted to pull you deep into the earth. Is that what you have felt in some of these different ones, kind of like you're being sucked into the earth?
Yeah, exactly. There was one back in 1998 where I spent some time in. I think it was at Avebury Truslow. It was kind of star-like formation. I actually had that feeling of, just like you're describing, of being pulled into the earth. And I actually fell asleep for a few seconds, and when I woke up, I actually felt like I was underground. It was not a comfortable feeling. I don't know why it does that, but yeah.
It's not a comfortable feeling. By the way, George, my iPhone did work there. Okay. I took a lot of pictures, and I literally listened to you yesterday and hooked you up on my iPhone yesterday and called you on my iPhone today because of your connection there. So that was really cool that you alerted us that we can use our iPhones. But again, back to what the general feeling that we walked away with is that this is an art place, that this is a message board that is connecting 2012, you know, the big crop circle a year ago, as you know, was the solar system on December 21st, 2012. You know, that one has to be remembered. And then the big headdress of the Mayan chieftain this year was the second message connecting all those people and times and calendars together to the crop circles. All those certainly have to be put on the chalkboard so that we can connect the dots.
Yeah, it definitely is about connecting the dots, and it definitely pulls you along to connect more of them, no doubt about it.
Well, is science investigating this at all? And when I say science, I'm talking about, you know, universities, for example.
I haven't seen a lot of that. I wish there was more because, you know, I'm a member of some of these scientific societies, you know, AAAS and so forth, and I read the scientific magazines and journals every week, and unfortunately, this sort of topic and a lot of topics that are associated with crop formations are never really taken seriously as I think they should be. I mean, there really should be some hard science being done here. We really could use the equipment and the funding, because if we could figure out why the shapes were creating certain energies, I mean, who knows what the implications of that are. Unfortunately, as you and I know, George, I mean, a lot of these institutions get so narrowly focused, they just can't see beyond these little areas of specialization that a lot of academics get involved with, and we just haven't branched out there. It's just endemic to the system. I mean, just to give you an example, you know about this ARPA-E grant proposal system that the Department of Energy had a couple months ago to get proposals for new types of energy systems and so forth. I mean, they got 5,000 proposals, apparently, and they can't process that many. So, you know, the vast majority of them, I think, like 98% were returned without even any explanation of why they weren't.
Exactly. And they'll give the money to their friends.
Right. Who would you think was reviewing these grant proposals? It was universities and the energy companies and, you know, established institutions.
Bingo.
Right. There you go. So
let's go to Reno, Nevada. Hello, Philip. You're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Yes. I was wondering. First of all, now have there been cropsicles that are not on the, like, crops, like in snow or sand or gravel? And also, could they be something like, you know, how the earth is a living creature? Could it be like chakras in a human body?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could have these kind of energy connections if you look at the different formations for how they're distributed across the planet, and they could connect in ways that we don't understand. I want to kind of almost imagine in my mind if each crop formation was connected to all the others in some ways at the same time, what sort of like a neural network or something like that. But there are ones, you know, there are crop ice formations sometimes and all sorts of things like that occasionally in dirt and so forth. I'm not sure if those are exactly the same phenomenon. They may have another cause, but you definitely do get circles spontaneously forming themselves in different materials. I'm just not sure if they're the same cause or the same effects.
It is dramatic. I mean, Linda Moulton Howe is obsessed with this stuff, Simeon. I guess it can be literally infectious, can it?
Yeah, it can be definitely addictive. It really feels like you're coming in contact with something that's really unknown and mysterious, and that's kind of putting you in contact with something that you haven't really connected with before. And for many of us, because it has that overlay and the feeling of being UFO, ET connected, you feel like you're getting a little closer to that when you're in one of them, you know, even indirectly. And so, you know, it really definitely keeps pulling you back, just partly out of your own curiosity and partly out of this feeling like you're kind of connecting to some sort of really important mystery that you want to know more about. It pulls you back again and again.
Okay, next up we go to Granbury, Texas. Vincent, you're up. Good morning, Vincent.
Hello, George. Hello, Simeon.
Hi, good morning.
Before I get started here, I'd like to say a special hey and thanks to Tom. He's always so pleasant and professional but friendly on the phone. I know he's working his little heart out up there, and I appreciate him.
Good.
So I wish I knew the name of the guy or even the show, but about 25 years ago, I saw a crop circle researcher on some show, and he was talking about having taken the golden mean ratio, 1.6, yada, 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 and applying it to the dimensions of some of these crop circles. And this was back when they were mostly just little circles within bigger circles. They weren't full of pictures like they are now. But he using this formula, he was able to translate these things into mathematical formulas and from that into music. And he played about four of them, little passages, three of which sounded quite a bit like Bach, and one actually sounded almost exactly like a passage out of Brahms' First Piano Concerto. Are you familiar with that researcher, or do you know of anything like that?
You know, I'm not sure if I'm familiar exactly with that researcher. I remember I heard David Kingston, you know, who unfortunately passed away recently, a really great researcher,
and he
played us some music.
That was a sad story, Simeon.
Yeah, what a pioneer in UFO research and the whole area, you know. And he played us some music once that he had encoded his computer to kind of decipher the shapes. I think he would actually scan them in with a scanner and let the computer figure it out. And some of it did sound a little bit like Bach, if I remember correctly. It wouldn't be surprising because, you know, anytime you kind of get this structured geometry, you're going to get definite geometric patterns in ones that are made naturally and in ones that are made by people. You find the phi ratio all over nature. You know, it's how your body is structured around the phi ratio. And so many natural structures are based around the phi ratio. It almost seems to be like a very important frequency in our dimension here. And so you get these ratios. I'm sure you can turn them into music or express them in a lot of ways that would show you that there's some sort of coherency there.
Okay, let's take another quick let's just chat a little bit before the break, Simeon. Then we'll come back with final calls for you as well. What's your latest work? What are you doing next?
Well, you know, I'm really excited. Right after you and I got to say hi over at the IRVA conference, you know, back in June, I believe it was, I got invited to do a remote viewing class in New York City, which I'm doing in 2 weekends from now. I hope anyone who wants to sign up, we still have some space. And I'm going to see if the Big Apple is ready to resonate. And I've also been asked to act as a technical consultant on a couple films.
Oh, good for you.
And a TV series related to science fiction, X-Files type stuff. I can't say too much about them right now, but this sort of things that we're talking about, people are working on to develop movies and TV dramas. You know. So,
okay, well, We need that. Stay with us. We're going to be back in a moment with final phone calls with Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM. We're going live to Switzerland next hour with Eric von Däniken, author of Chariots of the Gods and also History is Wrong. But when we come back, let's take final phone calls with Simeon Hine right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're with Simeon Hine, and we'll take your final phone calls this half hour as well. Simeon, do you find that these people are very passionate about these formations one way or another, whether they're man-made or not?
The circle makers or the people that are involved with research?
Both, I would say.
I would say yes, all the way around. I mean, the researchers, you know, you've had many on the show. They're very passionate about it. And, you know, you always have this feeling like you're close to some really important discovery, which, you know, you really are. And the circle makers are equally passionate, many of them, because they honestly feel they don't see themselves at all like hoaxers or anything like that. They feel impelled to do this, and they feel like they're contributing to the evolution of the planet by creating shapes like this and creating, you know, whatever it is they're creating out there, a sense of wonder and curiosity, and they're very committed to do it. They can't explain exactly why, but they feel it's important. So, and I don't doubt it in some way that it's very important.
All right, back to the phones we go now. Let's go to British Columbia and Canada International Line. Hey, Lori, go ahead.
Hi, guys. Good show tonight.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, do you think there's any connection from crop circles to the ancient runways in Peru?
It broke up the ancient runway. You're talking about the Nazca lines?
Yes.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, the Nazca lines, there's been some new research about that recently that showed that they were kind of where people walked along, and they had some real important significance. And they definitely are really big shapes that you can see from the air. They're done in, I guess, on the playa there, the soil surface. And you can actually see with various equipment where people walked along them a thousand years ago from its very subtle disturbance to the soil. So I'm not sure if it's exactly for the same reason, but it definitely has that feeling that something that you can't make sense of on the ground, from the air you can get a much better perspective, and we can only wonder about exactly, you know, what the purpose was.
I've got Eric Von Daniken coming in next hour, Simeon, so we'll chat with him about the Nazca lines, too.
Sure.
That'll be interesting. Lori, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Next up, we go to Sierra Vista, Arizona. Hello, Tony. Go ahead.
Yes. Glad to talk with you, George, and your guest tonight.
Sure.
Love the show. Been a fan since Art Bell.
Thank you so much.
And I had the same question as the previous young lady as far as the Nazca lines. Nobody really knows how they got there. And might they have been a precursor to the crop circles?
Always that possibility.
Uh-huh.
Always that possibility. Though they probably were made by those indigenous people at the time. The big question is why were they made, you know?
Yeah, and again, you know, when you look at something that big, you really wonder, how could anybody do that from the ground and know exactly what they're doing? Did they have some sort of aerial surveillance that helped them? Some of those, you know, apparently go right over mountain ranges and things.
Somebody was in probably a balloon.
They had
a hot air balloon, right? They were sending them signals or something. Let's go to Dave. He's driving around in San Bernardino. Hi, Dave.
How you doing, Mr. Norrie?
Okay, David.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Oh, I'm glad I got through. Hey,
super.
I just got a couple quick questions. One question, has anybody ever tried to bring a giant earthen magnet into the crop circle? And have you tried any experiments as far as natural energy, like a pendulum with different kinds of metals, and see if it's changed the metal in any way or given it a different kind of charge? Because you've talked a lot about it taking energy away from batteries. Maybe it's a different kind of energy we haven't found yet.
Yeah, great question. Thanks for bringing that up. It's something we haven't talked about yet. There have been a lot of magnetic effects that have been observed in crop formations over the years. Colin Andrews did a study of the Milton Hill Farms formation back in 2000. And actually, you can see the results right on the pictures page that we're linked to from Coast. He actually found that the formation created large magnetic disturbances that he was able to detect with many passes from a magnetometer. It almost matched, not exactly, where the crop was downed. And he actually thought at the time that there had to be magnets, powerful magnets, you know, buried in the soil. But I later found out, you know, that that was a man-made formation, that there were five people involved with it, which makes it even more mysterious, because that means they didn't plant any magnets that I know about, and I doubt they're just buried there. So it suggests, and that's very important, that if you shape the weed in the spiral form like that, it creates magnetic effects. We also had a case in 2008 with one of our tour guests who went in. This is an electrical engineer taught at the University of Oregon, and his electronic compass, that the hands on it started pointing so that north and south were only 90 degrees apart. That should not be possible. And it took about an hour or two for the hands to start separating once we went out of the formation. So those are two examples. There are probably many others, where the crop formation, apparently just shaping the weed into a nice spiral, precise form, created magnetic effects, which I would love to find out how that happens, because there's no conventional scientific explanation for that.
Okay, we'll go to Alice now in Brooklyn, New York. Hello, Alice. Go ahead.
Hi. I was listening to Linda Moulton Howe a long time ago, months and months ago, and she was talking about this stone that had been found that somewhere in the south, I think, and it looked like it had been there for a long, long time, and it had this pattern on it, and the stone itself had very unusual energetic properties to it, and the composition of it was like a very unusual composition, and it was nobody knows how it was. This pattern was made, and the pattern was an exact pattern of a crop circle that had been found. Mm-hmm. And does this? And I was wondering if you are familiar with that, and yeah. It just made me think about and going back to the energy aspect of it, and it just seemed.
I believe you're talking about the Roswell Stone, right?
Yes, exactly. I didn't remember that name.
I know. The pattern on the stone looks like the formation. And apparently the stone had been there for a long time. And if the story is correct, someone who was out there just happened to see it, you know, lying there in the desert or something like that. That's just
it was a hunter,
weird.
I think. It was a really weird way he found it. And
I can't explain it. It's very strange. And I don't have enough information really to know why that's true. We can only speculate. But it looked like the crop formation itself, and I don't know why that is.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe somebody should bring the stone to that specific circle and see what happens.
Yeah, there have been cases like that. There were the metal plates, I believe, found in Germany back in the 90s under the crop formation that looked like the formation itself. So there's a couple of cases of situations like that, but I'm not sure how to explain it.
Yeah. Another thing I was thinking actually about, that just as I was listening, waiting to come on, the energy aspect of it, talking about how even the man-made ones somehow have this energy in them. Maybe it's something about the energy from the wheat itself, and when it's flowing in this particular pattern, somehow it, like the life force of the wheat, maybe.
Right. I think that's a very productive way to think about it, because what you're kind of suggesting is that collectively the wheat has a sort of intelligence or capabilities as a group when they're organized in a pattern that they don't have individually, when there's just single standing stalks that aren't touching each other, that there's some sort of collective effect when they're organized that way, either an intelligence or a capacity that, you know, they usually don't have, and that's really what it suggests. And it's something that we don't understand. It's almost like if each wheat has a potential in some way, you put a lot of them together, it adds up to something significant.
Let's go to Tujunga, California. Hello, Donna. Good morning to you.
Yes. Hi. Hello, George, again. I was wondering, could it be that it could be a form of communication between the man-made crop circles and the ETs circles some kind of way?
What do you think? I'm not sure about the man-made, but I'm sure that it could be a form of communication possibly from ETs down to us, Simeon.
Yeah, that's what I
was
wondering.
Well, it could be bidirectional. It could be. And, you know, Doug and Dave were interviewed, I believe it was by one of the newspapers or could have been the BBC, you know, right at the end when they stopped doing it. And the last sentence of the interview is they said, "We always felt like something was making us do it." And no one ever looked at that. And I know a lot of the circle makers have said to me occasionally that they felt something's kind of directing them. And we don't totally know what that is. But it could be, you know, George, like you're suggesting, it's from ETs to humans. But there's no way to know exactly if the man-made ones aren't communicating something back. It's just something that we don't know what it is. And I'll tell you why I believe that. It's because, like, when you do something like remote viewing session, you don't know what you're doing on the page until you're really done with the session and you get your feedback. I mean, you're just scribbling and writing and so forth, but your subconscious knows what it's doing. And so the subconscious mind has a big capacity to communicate in ways that we don't consciously understand. And so there could be that aspect of it going on, that there's a communication that makes some sort of sense to us or to other types of intelligence that we can't consciously interpret.
Do you ever get frustrated, Simeon, when you're doing your work?
Yeah, you can reach a point where you just feel like, I just got to understand this, right? Yeah, I'm so close.
Yeah.
you're really at the edge. I'm sure anyone in sort of any sort of scientific research, you know, you really feel close, and you can't quite get over the edge there. You almost feel like you can see it. The only thing to do when you're at that point is just to relax and let it go for a while, pick it up again, because what you're, again, probably doing is trying to fit it into a box that doesn't belong in, and that's what it's showing you. It's bigger than that.
Let's go to the edge of North Carolina. We've got you, Michael. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Have there ever been any crop circles discovered right before an impending disaster such as 9/11 or the tsunami a few years back?
Good question. Simeon, what do you think?
Not that I know about. There could be some. I'm just not aware of any that were kind of put down in that fashion. Of course, you have to understand they're mostly done in the summer when there's actually wheat there, or it could be in the southern hemisphere in our winter. So they're kind of limited to the time of year when they can show up. but I haven't actually seen any correlate that way. I could be wrong. I'm sure there's someone out there that probably knows of some correlations where it really seems like one looked like something for an event that happened later on. I'm just not aware of any of those.
On the man-made formations, don't you find the paths of how the humans went out into the wheat field?
No. You know, in England, they have tram lines, you know, tractor lines. They call them trams over there.
So they walk up them.
Yeah. And even so, you can be very careful how you walk into a wheat field. And, of course, they're aware of this. They're going to kind of walk into it in a way that doesn't leave that track. You're probably saying to yourself, are they trying to trick us and fool us? You know what they'll say to me if I ask them that? If people know it's a man-made formation, they're going to trash it. They're not going to take it seriously. And it's almost a little bit like you need a little bit of that subterfuge. Because if people know exactly which is which, they're not going to put any intention into it, right? Into the man-made ones, thinking, oh, that's just a man-made one. It's not real. And maybe the intention, like you're suggesting before, maybe it needs some of that to activate the human intention. I mean, a lot of other research has shown that plants, you know, can react to human thought and feelings and so forth. So maybe the plants are reacting to the people either making them or people coming in later on. And if people come in with a negative attitude, that could get reflected. So they're going to do everything they can to not let you know that they were there.
Let's go to San Diego. Bashir, it's your turn. Hi, Bashir.
Good morning, Mr. Nori. How are you? And good morning to your guest.
Good morning.
Sir, I have a very simple question. I'm sure that we all know that the surveillance camera these days cost very cheap. And why these the farmers that don't have a surveillance camera, if their field get damaged that much, cost them a lot of money? And if you can give me a good reason why they don't have a camera, or have you ever been contact these farmers to allow you to have a camera to find out what this mystery is all about, doing that? Actually, even if it's a human doing this, we have to find out that there's a beautiful art. Sometimes I see those. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Cameras. Don't the farmers go out there and, you know, take pictures for maybe insurance purposes?
Yeah, well, first of all, just before we answer that, you know, the farmers sometimes do get compensated because they'll put up collection boxes in some cases. I mean, in some cases, they'll actually make a lot more than the wheat was worth.
Right.
So there, some of them are, you know, allow this to happen. They're used to it. Low-light cameras of that quality would be very expensive. I've gone out there with my night vision, you know, little camcorders, and you don't see anything even with those at 10 feet. So at any sort of distance, I doubt you'd see very much. It'd be very expensive. And I think farmers are mainly interested in being farmers and not being, you know, policemen or something. They can still harvest the crop anyway. What really causes the damage afterwards is a lot of people walking in and so forth, pushing the seeds into the ground. But I think that's a very expensive proposition. And I'm not sure, unless you had the really top-of-the-line equipment, if it would even work. So I'm not sure if it's even really technically feasible without, you know, a huge expenditure.
Let's go to Decatur, Georgia, east of the Rockies. John, it's you.
George Simeon, quick question. I've listened to Coast for a while. I heard another remote viewer, I won't mention who it was, say that he used remote viewing to explore the question of crop circles, and he said that it was something like time-traveling aliens putting a marker down in a perishable medium as a marker in time for them to use. But I was just wondering, Simeon, if you used remote viewing at all to try to explore this mystery. I don't know how, what kind of cueing or how you would, what kind of question you would pose to pick up information.
Yeah, no, actually, the very first crop circle I remote viewed back, you know, way back in 1996 at the Farsight Institute. That was my first contact with crop circles. I didn't even know what the word meant back then. And I got this picture. I didn't know what that was. And I did get in that session, and I still have the session. I've looked at it from time. Definitely something related to extraterrestrials, patterns, archetypes, symbols, energy, and so forth. Maybe even a little bit of time travel. Of course, it's sometimes very difficult to interpret an RV session like that. And we do give it to our viewers occasionally when they're a little, you know, farther along the way, just to see what they get. And, you know, it has those connotations, but it's hard to actually pin it down that much, at least from the sessions I've done, to say, well, it's, you know, it's time-traveling aliens. But I think for them, time travel is kind of a routine thing. So maybe that's not so far out there.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, let's take a final caller here. Michael in Albany, New York. Michael, thanks for calling.
Thank you. this. I ran across the I-90 in the 787 in Lacing down Lower Albany, Loudonville. And there was this circle like a wagon wheel, and it had 8 spokes that looked like leaves forming a figure S.
Huh.
But it was on grass, not in wheat. It was beautifully done. I don't know who did it. You know, just appeared there one day.
Yeah, well, they can appear in all sorts of materials. You know, that's not only wheat. It can be in barley, oats, grasses, and all sorts of materials like that. And, you know, it's just part of the mystery of it, why it appears in different, you know, different grain materials. And what of course, scientifically, you'd wonder, is there an effect of the different types of grain materials on the effects the crop formation has and so forth? You know, not just the geometry, but the material itself. And that's another, you know, open question that we, you know, haven't really resolved yet. So
tell me where you can get your books and your works.
Oh, well, you know, a lot of the pictures and things we've talked about are in Opening Minds, and you can get that from my website or from Amazon. Just click through some of the links. And, of course, I'd be glad to sign any books if you want to order it from me directly. But, you know, this is such a fascinating area, George. We're just scratching the surface. And the main thing is just to, you know, not to reach these early premature conclusions, just kind of enjoy the mystery of it a little bit, because you don't want to kind of close it into a box too much. But if people want to go learn more about this, they can go to my website, openingminds.info, or for remote viewing, learnrv.info.
And it's a small community, isn't it, Simeon?
A small community of researchers?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you get to know the people after a while. We all have our different views, and you've had a lot of them on the show from time to time. And that's what really makes it interesting, is there's so many different points of view. Everyone kind of has a little piece of the puzzle. I don't think anyone has exclusive access to the truth on this. But that's really what makes it, you know, so mysterious and big, is there's just a lot of different angles on them, and they're all partly correct.
Super. Simeon Hein has been our guest on Coast to Coast AM. Next up, we go live to Switzerland. The author of Chariots of the Gods, Eric von Däniken.